This show is not for the easily offended. So if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
Snowpocalypse is currently going on.
All right. Hey, gang, it's another episode of Indie Comic Book Noise. This time it's episode 355, if you can believe that. What do you think, guys?
We did 355.
Johnny's still alive.
I'm Steve Raker here from the Comic Book Bunker, along with Whirlwind X Kevin and Andrew the LA Rabbit and Phil. We've got the four corners of the Northern Hemisphere here covered between LA and Canada and upstate New York-ish.
Well, one of the Canadians has to move out west. Either Kevin or Phil has to go to Vancouver.
Anybody got any family in Calgary?
I hope not.
Yeah.
Boo.
It's fucking cold there.
Oh, I love Calgary. Alberta, does your hair hang low?
I don't like hockey, and I don't like cows.
Wait. So it's cold in Calgary, but it's balmy and warm in Ontario?
Well, I got Starbucks here and shit. I got, like, fields and stuff.
This here on Indie Comic Book Noise is where we gather together on the Deliberate Noise Network, and it's, basically it's the Marvel Noise guys' chance to talk about indie books and use foul language like Phil just did. Woohoo!
And those Japanese cartoons Kevin likes.
Oh, I got some of those this week.
Should really be some of the Marvel Noise guys, unless we can get David A. Price or some of the other Legion to come over here.
He does another podcast, from what I'm told.
I don't recall. Isn't he just the Marvel Noise guy?
Andrew, I've got a book that I was reading that is right up your alley because it involves one of your merry pranksters from your days in Syracuse when it was you and Steve Ellis and Ryan Dunleavy and Fred Van Lente hanging out, making comics, getting things started. They were picking your brain, trying to figure out what they need, what they could steal from you to bring them over the threshold.
Turned out nothing.
But this is a book that I think it was originally a Kickstarter. I found it on Comixology, and there were it was free in one of the big discount bundles, if I'm not mistaken, the first issue, and checked it out. And I was like, ooh, I got to check out the other couple of issues. There's three issues to date, and it's called The Only Living Boy, written by David Gallagher and drawn by Steve Ellis.
I backed the Kickstarter. I have a sketch cover for the first one by Steve. And, I think it's really shown what they are doing through the Bottled Lightning, their own kind of distribution. They've moved to a digital. I believe they were the team that did the Box 13, which was one of the first digital original creations back in the day. So they're kind of on the cutting edge of that stuff. And Steve always does beautiful work, but particularly with the fantasy elements from his experience in the gaming community. He also did a version of the Moorcock Elric novels.
Right.
He did the illustrations in that. And he always does beautiful work, just marvelous stuff.
Yeah, like I said, I found them on Comixology. I think the subsequent issues, there's three issues to date so far, were maybe $1.99 a piece. But it's now serialized as a webcomic on... I think it's olbcomic.com for Only Living Boy. And the first issue came out in July of 2012, the second in July of 2013, and the most recent in this past October of 2014. And it's kind of like maybe an 8 year old and up. So I kind of call it an all ages, even though it's not for the little ones per se. But it's a pretty good comic actually for that kind of 10 year old mindset, because it's pretty straightforward storytelling, and there aren't too many peripherals that are thrown together that are not creating enough of a landscape for you to just be able to step in and experience the story, which is great. I'm reading them in chunks. It's kind of like a modern Commandy, if you will, where a kid is lost his memory and he's in an unfamiliar world and he has to survive. You know, he's a typical, like, adolescent teen, though, not a big, like, bulky, you know, Tarzan Kazar type like, you know, Commandy was. So he's got to use, like, his cat-like swiftness and adolescent cunning and speed and stuff to, you know, assess the surrounding danger and get out of the way. There's a, you know, a mythical fantasy world with arenas and dragons, and he meets up with various entities and has to figure out pretty quickly where to place his allegiances and stuff, and I found it to be really, really fun stuff.
I also think that they did the character feels like his age. Like, sometimes when you have kids, they can act, and look, I'm no expert. I mean, I was a 10-year-old boy, I guess, at one point, technically, but it felt like sometimes they when these things are written, the characters act too mature in a way.
Sure.
And I think that they've done a good job of reminding you it's a kid, and like I said, I think Steve's sense of action, his character designs for the monsters and these weird creatures and everything are just a lot of fun. Absolutely. Like, it's a cool, visually interesting world, which is what's getting me. I mean, you're right about the story and everything, but I think for me it's spending time in that fun, alternate kind of fantasy, post-apocalyptic sort of mishmash. But the kid himself is not from that world. Is probably the only difference from Commandy.
Yeah, I mean, he looks like a kid. What happens is the series like starts out, and there's a kid who's on the run from what we don't know, and it starts pouring, and he kind of goes to the outskirts of the city to kind of like a park, and finds refuge under a kind of a like a little bit of a overcropping of rock, and falls asleep, and when he wakes up, he's, you know, in Oz, if you will, you know. So we don't know what the whole deal is, or if it's all going to be a dream at the end or whatever, but he's thrown into a world that he was, you know, never made to be a part of. He's the only living boy, Andrew, the only living boy.
I think that it's really fun. I did see that they're actually coming out to the Long Beach Expo at the end of February, which is kind of neat. That expo has really expanded this year, and they've got all kinds of creative. So I did, like I said, I was able to get that first one in print, and then I think I also have a sketch cover version too.
Cool.
And I know it's mostly digital, but you know me, and I really try and run down the print when I can. So I think there's copies out there available, or at least there were for those of you that are like me. But otherwise, like you say, it's serialized, which for most people I'm sure is a better way to get it. Certainly cheaper and more convenient.
OLBcomic.com.
What's the greatest sci-fi property out there?
The greatest?
Yeah.
Like, in comic form?
Galaxy Quest.
The Bible. Damn it, you got it.
Oh.
Wait, me or Steve?
Well, I was asking all of you, but obviously Steve knew.
Oh, right, well, I would have been wrong then.
I'm pretty sure the Bible sold more copies.
I was trying to think of the worst out of left field space 1999-ish.
Well, A, it has a big cult following. It came out in 1999, and IDW recently, well, I think this past Wednesday, came out with Galaxy Quest number 1.
Why?
Well, what do you mean? I've recently watched the movie, and I think it holds up.
Yeah, I just wonder why they, like, I guess sci-fi stuff is doing well, so, like, oh, we should just...
Well,
it's because somebody's got a story, and the story was making. And hopefully, it. What do you think, Phil? Is it?
Well, for one thing, right now there's a boom in comics where a lot of these movies and TV shows are getting finished off in comics, kind of like Edward Scissorhands, stuff like that. And this
a thing where it needed like
absolutely.
Okay,
that's why I'm buying these, because I'm excited to see them again. Hmm. And this one. Basically, it's years after the movie takes place, and they're it's kind of like Battlestar Galactica when it rebooted. So they're now doing the TV show again and the movie, and I don't know if you remember the movie at all, but they were trying to get, like, they had this mechanism where it could turn back time for a bit.
Okay.
Well, when that happened, it screwed something up because it like everywhere that happened, it wasn't just that area. So it screwed up something that happened on another planet. So this comic is about what happened to that planet and how it affected it, and now they're coming after those guys again to, I guess, well, I don't know the plan yet, maybe get revenge or whatever. But they're, there's a new alien race attacking Earth kind of now. So it's just them getting back together, and I think it's awesome. I think it's a lot of fun, and it hits the tone of the movie. The art, I wish the likeness was a little better, because the Toolman Taylor dude or whatever, he doesn't, Tim Allen, he doesn't look like him at all, I find. Like, I got a little confused. Like, I had to look up the movie and the pictures of who the actors were and everything to figure out who these characters were. But yeah, I think if you like the movie, or if you don't think you do, rewatch it and get this comic.
Andrew, would you please step up to the front of the class?
All right. So have you guys heard of Golden Age hero, the Green Turtle?
No.
Yes, I believe I have.
Oh.
Well, isn't it some like Chinese 1930s or
1940s?
Like yeah.
Superhero, the Green Turtle. Well, I had never heard of the guy, but I was at the library picking up a couple of trades of the iZombie. My wife was interested, and I was kind of curious.
Get ready for the TV.
And I was scrolling the book stand and saw this, The Shadow Hero, by Gene Luen Yang and Sunny Liu. And it's from a First Second, and we've talked about a bunch of their books. And even when First Second hasn't been to my taste, it's always quality. So I'm always like, oh, I'll pick them up and read it, you know? First of all, it's a library, so how put out of shape can I be? And second of all, like I said, I've never, I think they're a fun publisher. So I'd heard of the author American-born Chinese, but I hadn't read that book either. So this is me really dipping my toes in. And it's basically a reimagining of the Green Turtle. But I didn't know that till I got to the end of it, and that's when they explained. So it's a Chinese-American superhero, kind of starting out as a contemporary with the same time as Superman and all them. So he basically tells the story of his father comes across with this spirit animal that hides in his shadow, this turtle. And then he thinks his dad's just a regular dude. And then when the local mob bosses put the shakedown on him and his dad gets killed, he finds out that he had this shadow with him. And it was this mystical force, and the deal was if you live in a shadow, you can make a deal with the spirit. And his father's deal was to never drink again. So, because his dad used to be a big fighter, and he would get drunk and get in all these fights. And the mother is kind of disappointed with the new world, and she ends up running into the new Superman analog called Anchor of Justice. And when he's foiling a crime, and she's like, oh my gosh. My son, you're going to become a superhero. So she sews him the suit of the Green Turtle. And the kid trains to become a superhero. And it's kind of funny because none of it works. Like, she tries to dump him in a bunch of chemical spills and he just gets burned. She, like, puts weird stuff in his food and he gets sick. Tries to get a dog to bite him and all this. And then she hears of this one Batman-style one. So she's like, oh, you need training. So she gets the local kung fu guy, who is an old flame of hers, to give him training. And that guy's kind of funny, too. And so it has this really nice sense of humor to it. The art's really nice. It's a caricature exaggerator with really thick lines. But there's that light touch of humor in it that I guess for some people, maybe it would be a little too silly. I thought it walked the line well enough. I like having kind of jokes. Like I said, the mother's trying to feed him weird poison. Like, I think it enhances the story. But he basically decides that he's going to go avenge his dad. But the problem is, like, no one's going to touch the crime bosses. You know what I mean? It reminds me of that Denzel Washington film where he just shoots the guy in the street and no one would testify. Because, you know, he's the crime boss. Like, they won't go after him. So it's his whole story of kind of entering the underworld and fighting the crime boss and how that ends up working out. And his deal, when his dad dies and the spirit wants to live in his shadow, is to make him invulnerable to bullets. But because in these magic things, the promise wording is so important, it was not a great choice. Because obviously he can still get punched and hit and stabbed and everything else. And they have a bit of back and forth. Him and the little shadow spirit are always chatting at each other. And so the Green Turtle gets in a fight, and it turns out that one of the other spirits, the big bad crime boss, who's the boss of the guy that killed his dad, he had a spirit in him. And it was just a fun, like, it ties the whole neighborhood together, and I'm not going to spoil it, but I really enjoyed the humor, the fighting, the bringing these things together. And then at the end, the Superman analog, Anchor of Justice, comes and says, you know, your country might ask you to help in the war. Would you be willing to, you know? And he's like, yes. And he's like, oh, that's so awesome. And then the Anchor reveals that he's an alien at that time. And he's like, oh. And so, because a lot of it's also about your idea of what it means to be American and your role kind of in, you know, he's an immigrant and all those sorts of stories. And I thought that was really touching. And then at the end, they explain about the Green Turtle. And then they include a copy of the Green Turtle. But 40s comics, like, aside from the super racism, which is also annoying, like, they're just pretty brutal to get through. Like, people don't like 60s comics. They should read stuff from the 40s. If they like, it's all, like, just describing what's happening. What's really interesting is in the Green Turtle, you never see the guy's face. Like, he's always from the back. Like, there's a bunch of weird stylistic choices. He never wears a shirt. He just has a cape with a turtle. And he has an unexplained turtle shadow and all these weird, fun, interesting things that were more interesting to read about than actually read the comic.
So is he the first Ninja Turtle, would you say?
I would say the Green Turtle is the first. He is, I don't know if he's a mutant, but he's definitely a Ninja Turtle hero. But anyways, the Shadow Hero, I just thought it was a fun mix of, like, humor and lightness. But those ideas of, like, you know, what it was like to be the immigrants coming over and becoming part of America. Because that's some of it, too, when he's in the underworld. They use the term that Chinese people use for white people type of thing. Like, first they think he's one of them. And then when they realize, oh my gosh, he's a Chinese superhero, that's really cool in a way. You know what I mean? And those sorts of identities that are kind of interesting. Me being a generic white dude, it's not ever anything I grappled with.
Same reason I like Fievel Goes West.
Oh, yeah, Don Bluth always did quality stuff, too. I just find that stuff, I don't know, it's like an interesting subplot. It's not the entirety of the book, it's just an interesting flavor to this character's story. It's part of who he is, and I think that stuff's cool. I was at the Japanese-American Museum this weekend. They had the Hello Kitty exhibit that was in connection with the Hello Kitty Con, and I went to that. And it was kind of interesting because when it ends, it puts you in the regular museum and drops you right into the internment camp parts.
What?
Where you walk through. Well,
that's quite a culture shock.
It's a heck of a
goodbye,
transition.
Kitty.
But in World War II, America obviously wrongly locked up its Japanese American citizens as
Roosevelt,
their belongings and all that stuff.
Not FDR.
So you said you went to a con?
No,
it was conned.
Originally,
because I was going to say you couldn't even wait a month.
No, he went to a museum.
Originally, last year they had the 40th anniversary Hello Kitty Con, which I went to. In connection with that, for about 6 months, they're doing a Hello Kitty display at the museum where the convention was, and right next to it. So this was, we had booked tickets way ahead of time, and so. We went and saw the exhibit that was in connection with that. And it's kind of interesting because Hello Kitty is devoid of any real story. Like, it's this concept of, like,
it's true.
Gift, this, like, small gifts and, like, happiness and cuteness. But it's just interesting to see how they've taken, like, more of a concept and spun it out into these marketing ideas and expressions. They also had a little art gallery. For those of you that follow me on Twitter, LA_rabbit1, I tweeted a bunch of photos of some of the sort of modern takes on the character and the ideas. And it just is interesting that something that's barely and, you know, so little content to it can be spun out in so many interesting ways. But it's also very positive. You know, there's no, I mean, I guess people can critique the fact that the character has no mouth, I guess. If you want to read that into some silencing of the ladies or whatever. But I think that's a excessively negative way to look at what is a pretty thin soup to begin with, and just how much fun and happiness it brings people.
Yeah, well, joy.
But anyways, I just wanted to contrast that experience of, like, being reminded kind of the sort of Japanese American experience in the 40s.
I had a tortoise and the hare joke to make before, but we've gone so very far from the Green Turtle.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say that
well, that's kind of the joke now, I guess.
The whole turtle thing reminded me of a stick figure comic where he really wanted to be a chef, but he kept on getting superpowers. Like, he was struck by lightning, he was bitten by a dog, he fell into a vat of chemicals, and he's just like, all right, fine, I'll become a superhero. I won't be a chef.
Yeah, that was it. Like, this was the reverse. It's just kind of a fun, I don't know. Like I said, I rambled on a bit and segued, but it's that type
sounds
of book
funny.
Where it got me thinking about. I like thinking about those kind of, what's your national identity and how does it relate? And, you know, the wartime was such a big deal. But first I was like, whoa, it's kind of like some type of Kick-Ass almost, back like a Kick-Ass set in the 40s at first, this weird guy trying to be a superhero but not doing very well. Like, he does okay, but basically he gets his butt kicked in the beginning until the shadow creature gives him that ability to not get shot. And even then, he still gets beat up a fair amount. Yeah, but Shadow Hero, Gene Luen Yang and Sunny Liu from First Second Publishing.
I think it's as chapters, or it used to be. Maybe it's all in one now, too, on Comixology, if I remember. I guess it's good if a comic comes back to you in a way, right? Like, you didn't read it and just go, oh, that was okay, and then you never thought about it again, right?
You mean you tried to throw it out, and then, like, the next day it was back on your desk type of thing?
Yeah, and the pages were flipping open going, look, read me. So, you know, I guess that's a good thing? I don't know.
You put it on a train.
It wasn't entirely disposable because it flipped right out of the recycling bin and came back to you. So,
put it on a hot air balloon.
Yeah, so I was going to spoiler up some of the Massive series.
Ooh.
By Brian Wood and I guess Gary Brown for a large portion of the series. Because the last arc, like, that series ended up weird. Like, I don't know how else to put it. Like, I guess there was some clues maybe early on with one of the characters. Because, you know, the whole series was, like, them looking for another ship called the Massive, and they were a crew of environmentalists, but the world's been all messed up with natural disasters and everything. Like, what are they really going to do with their environmentalism when the whole world is messed up to begin with and they can't save the world? So, yeah, the last arc had me, like, processing a lot of stuff. Because as far back as issue 5, like, you see some weird stuff going on with one of the characters, and, like, they're in Antarctica, and they survive, like, some kind of plunge into the water and stuff like that, but I don't think that really tips me off that anything is going on, because I'm just like, oh, action movie tropes or whatever, you know. Like, all the bad guys can't shoot, or, you know, that they're just like, oh, we can outrun lava. Like, certain things like that wouldn't really clue you into something. Although the series is trying to be, like, well, it seemed like it was trying to be realistic and dealt with, like, issues we're facing nowadays and what happened in a world that's all messed up. Like, if you're not overfishing things anymore, like, in that type of world, when people aren't overfishing stuff, then the fish come back, and then there's too many fish or stuff like that. So then you could sort of deal with some issues. And that's what basically the series was. Like, I thought it was really cool at the beginning, and then, you know, it went to varying levels after that, where I'm like, I enjoyed that more than other things. But as you start getting towards, like, the end of the series, then you start wondering if certain characters are, like, immortal or, like, weird science fiction is, like, creeping into the book.
Is the series
that came
over?
Out of nowhere?
The series is over now.
Okay.
It's done. It was 30 issues.
That sci-fi stuff came out of nowhere?
Well, that's what I was saying with issue 5. Like, I think that's where, like, that's where the weird, like, that's where you could say, like, there's some reveals, and I think that's where you could say that's why that character survived.
That's where shit went sideways.
Yeah, like that. That's probably the moment where you should have been going, okay, something's weird going on here. But even still, that's only like one character. Mm-hmm. Like it's fine. Like if you just said if one character would have been weird, and it's still like some sci-fi, but it went far, far beyond anything like that. I mean. There's no way. I don't think you could have predicted what happened in that book. Like it just got so weird. But yeah, they went to all these cool places and everything. But you started seeing that something was going to happen, and you kind of wondered if they were going to find their ship and everything. But that was kind of secondary to what was going on, because it's like more disasters start happening. And you're like, okay, the whole world's just gonna sort of, I don't know, like kill anything that's remaining, and then like the ocean starts bubbling, and like islands start appearing like around the world, but the islands are like from the land, like the seabed, so like yeah, the people that are remaining on the world are going for these new areas of land because you know they're not all. They're not all messed up like the existing land masses are. But people just end up, you know, fighting over it and, like, blowing it up and everything. And this just keeps on happening more and more. And you're like, I have no idea where this series is going. And then you start getting floating islands all over the world. And I'm like, what happened to the realism? What happened to, like, this was our world type of thing? So at some point, like, all these things just come off of the seabed and leave the Earth. Like, they're spaceships or something.
Wow.
And I'm like, what is going on?
Maybe he got bored writing it like I did reading it.
I don't know. Like there's some link between one of the cast members, and there's a lot of reveals with that cast member, and it sort of ties in with some of this stuff, but I don't know. Like, I was fine with the sci-fi stuff from the beginning, but it just seems weird. Like, after all that time spent with, like, it seemed like real-world issues to have the last arc, like, go totally out there. Like, just throw a lot of sci-fi crap in there.
Crap.
Like, it's kind of enjoyable. I kind of liked it, I think, but it's like, where did that come from? It's just so weird. I don't know if you guys have much experience with, like I think there's, like, you
not
think
as much experience
the
as you,
right?
Obi-Wan.
We've seen Dusk Till Dawn.
Yeah.
You know how that shit
like,
works.
I guess it's still sort of within the same genre, but.
Well, no, the how it takes a total flip at the end.
Yeah. It's not like it was a romance and it went to like a sci-fi story. Like it's not that far of a jump, but I'm just like, wow, didn't see that coming. Did not see that coming at all.
Hey, as long as you still enjoyed it.
I think I did. I'm just processing it still.
Wish I could help you there.
Yeah, it's just weird.
Well, his voice.
So if you ever check out that series, yeah, there's some other stuff going on. Maybe I should reread it. Maybe that's the thing.
I found it a bit boring myself, but I only read the first arc, so I can't really judge it as a whole.
There was just some interesting ideas, though. Like, if you have a flooded city and you put, like, you get all those, like, storage containers that you see in, like, shipping yards, and you, like, you build your new city, like, halfway up
like
with skyscrapers.
I felt like it was trying to make my brain work.
Yeah, I could see that. Way.
30 issues is not too much of a commitment, though. That's not too bad.
Yeah. And then my other favorite Dark Horse book, Mind Management, is going to be wrapping soon, too. So that's kind of weird.
Yeah, you told us last time.
Yeah, I know. Still awesome.
What else is still awesome is, I know we've mentioned it earlier in the series, but now it's one issue away from its completion. It's going to be 10 issues total, is The Private Eye from thepanelsyndicate.com, which is the pay-what-you-want series from Brian K. Vaughan and Marcos Martin. And it started off with, like, as being, first of all, I should just say it's a digital only. It's only going to be digital. It's only going to be this 10 issues, and they say that they're not going to revisit the characters, and that this is the entire story, and that's the deal, and they're going to move on to something else. It literally is. You pay what you want for a downloadable file of the of your choice for the issues, which is really a nice thing to do. Once you check out the quality of it, though, I'm pretty sure that people probably were paying more as they went along rather than less. But it starts off like a kind of a clever take on a post-cloud, post-internet-like culture. And there's a like a cliched murder mystery deal. It's like presented to this young private eye where, you know, he meets the girl who wants him to take the case and then she gets killed, that kind of thing. And he still doesn't want to get involved, but reluctantly does end up being on the case to try to figure out what's happened. And the private eye takes us through his world's crazy, like, press power and like corporate dynamics as he tries to save his own ass and be more helpful than he's willing to admit that he is willing to be. So it kind of goes from a small crime plot to like a big deal, like James Bond villain type plot with worldwide implications. The characters are really good. They end up getting pretty keenly developed over the first 9 issues. Even the two French henchmen. And things are really amped up for a big conclusion in the 10th issue, which is still yet to be released. Oh, and the colors by Munsta Vincenti are, the craziest in comics right now. Purples, greens, oranges, all in the same panel. The images leap off the page as only comic book colors can really make happen. It's very enjoyable. A good ride and a good project to support.
I think we were in there, weren't we, as the old man?
I grabbed the first few, but I've got so many digital comics that are wasting away and from those Humble Bundles that I'm on kind of a ban of buying new digital comics. Read up. Like, it's bad enough I got paper comics I haven't read, but it's far too easy for me to just buy a lot of, because digital content can get so cheap and then it sits away. My bookshelves at least can visually nag me, where digital content just it just sits silently judging.
So this episode we have some comics that came out of a recycling bin and talked to us, and shelves of books that talk to us and nag us.
I go for the approach of reading what interests you regardless of the format, and sometimes it's print, sometimes it's digital.
Yeah, I had to get those Flash Gordons. They were just too cheap over the weekend. Like, what can I say?
Well, I always go for print first, but if I can't get it, then I go digital if I have to. That's how I do it.
What else you been doing, Phil?
Well,
No. What have you been reading?
Oh,
that was close.
Well, I kind of took a little look-see at DC Noise, and I don't think they cover Vertigo, so I think I'm safe at cornering that market. I could be wrong, but for now, I'm going to take it.
Vertigo Noise.
It's indie.
And what one of the greatest comics from Vertigo ever is 100 Bullets. I'm sure you guys remember that one. I know some of you have read it. Steve?
I have not read it.
Yeah,
I have not read it either.
Oh my god, Andrew!
I have a couple of the. Remember, they were releasing like the first 5 or 6 free on comics. How many?
So he hasn't read it.
Oh my god, guys!
I've never read it.
They use this comic in universities and shit. And you guys have read all.
I wasn't reading comics when it came out.
You read a fucking Turtle comic.
Yeah, but that was a Turtle comic I read today. I wasn't around when 100 Bullets came out.
Oh, you got
Bullets.
All right, it's definitely, come on. Tell me how I got to read it.
Well, it's one of my favorite series of all time, and not too long ago, they had a follow-up miniseries called Brother Lono, which is, I don't know if you remember reading Preacher for the first time. You know that devil cowboy dude?
Who would read
Whenever Preacher? He'd start walking towards him, like it was scary when you saw him at first, the first time you read Preacher. This guy is, what was that?
Nothing. Why would you read Preacher?
What do you mean? Preacher's amazing.
Preacher was great.
One of my favorites.
I like Preacher, but I read it, I don't know, maybe 5-10 years ago. I think that if I'd read it in the 90s when it was coming out, I probably would have liked it more. I mean, it didn't age, but it did feel like, oh, this is of that time. I mean, it was well done, but you did have a certain feel.
I binge read it trade after trade. It was great. Really good.
Yeah, that's how I did too for half the series. Then I collected the rest in issues after that. So yeah, anyways, so there's a character in 100 Bullets that was just like that. This guy, Lono, whenever he showed up, it was bad news. This guy he was invincible. Like, he would fuck shit up. This is like a mob type comic, right? 100 Bullets. So he was kind of like, a hitman someone would hire. So anyway, 100 Bullets had this crazy ending. I'm not going to talk about or spoil it all. But this is one of the characters that lived. So this comic takes place, I'm not sure how long afterwards, but basically he's been living in this town in Mexico in an orphanage, helping a priest run an orphanage. He's not getting in trouble anymore. I forget what happened to him, but I guess something made him kind of go on the side of good. Like, he's acting like a good guy, helping people out, things like that. And then all of a sudden, big drug dealers there start trying to get the orphanage involved with some of their dirty work and stuff. And one issue, you just see it in his eyes, like, holy fuck, he's going to snap and become that crazy asshole again. And he does, and he just, like, tears them all apart. And it's just, this comic is so intense. Even the parts where he's not bad, like, just these gangsters, like, the things they do to people and everything. If you haven't read 100 Bullets, it doesn't matter at all. You could still totally read this and enjoy it, just for his character. It's not a happy ending type of comic for sure. But if you haven't read 100 Bullets yet, I think you're crazy. And you guys gotta, like, there's 11 trades out, or you can get the hardcovers to catch up for those.
It's 100 comics.
But they're so good. They're so intense. Like, the whole series is amazing.
All right, I'm open to it. What was the name of the sequel again?
What was that?
What was the name of the sequel again?
Brother Lono. Well, it's called 100 Bullets. Oh, no, I thought it was called 100 Bullets Presents, but maybe it isn't. I thought it was. Right. Cool. But yeah, it's just 100 Bullets, Brother Lono.
Andrew.
Yes, sir. Well, do you guys want to talk
your papers.
about a comic that's coming out shortly from our friends at Action Lab? Or do you want me to talk about a Kickstarter?
Action Lab.
That's two.
All right, let's talk about the exciting world of Nutmeg. As we've talked about before, Action Lab.
Kickstarter.
Saw that on Comixology today.
Is it a Kickstarter? I thought it was an Action Lab.
No, I was changing my vote.
Oh. Because, you know, sometimes I do have books. The Cab one, the Haunted Cab book, that was on Kickstarter, but I think it also eventually came out through Action Lab. We reviewed that one. This one coming out in March, but I think it might be available digitally anyway. That's how I ended up reading it.
Yeah, there was a 99-cent, maybe the first chapter, I'm not sure. But I noticed it. Something went up today for that.
Yeah, it's a book called Nutmeg. And what it is it's sort of the trope of kind of sort of like a noir crime book, but set in like a middle school with these two girls that are have to do with baking brownies instead of your big one. So the first page opens up with them, you know, they've kind of been caught, and it's that retrospective that's so famous in those ones about, you know, like, how'd we get away with it? We knew it was never going to last. But the one big question is, you know, would you do it again? And, like, of course. And then it jumps into the story. And I know I've bagged on that cutting back, but that's like a pretty famous convention. And when you're playing with conventions, I don't have as much of an issue with it. You know what I mean? Like, you have to set this up because you're telling that type of story, but in a different setting using those means. So, does that make sense? And my attempt to exculpate my hypocrisy?
Not if you use big words like that.
I thought you said middle school.
So it starts with Cassie getting introduced to the class, and the dynamic's pretty well set up. She gets assigned like a, you know, like a class person to take around this girl, Poppy. And, oh no, I dropped Baron Zemo's sword. Dang it. your little 3¾ hand.
That is not this sword! Whoa.
You had to put a halt on the podcast so you can pick up a toy sword.
Yes! Damn it. Damn you, Zemo.
Non sequitur.
So Poppy and Cassie get teamed up, and you can tell right away, like, there's the rich, annoying girl, you know, the popular rich one, Saffron, and she's like the head of the mean girls type, and so you can tell there's grief between Poppy and Saffron, and Cassie just doesn't care. She's like, whatever, like, you know, she won't step to that game. And Cassie's like, look, I'm just, or Poppy's like, I'm short timing it, man. I got a year left, and then I'm on out of this dump, and I don't care. And that's when Cassie's like, look, you know, there's going to be more people like that. Like, that's, yeah, she's one person, but the whole world is filled with bullies like that. And so it kind of sets up the antagonism, and no surprise, like, Poppy and Saffron knew each other when they were kids and grew apart. And it turns out that, it just continues to set the dynamic, and then it ends right at the end with them saying, wait, I have a way to sabotage this big bake sale coming, and I have a way to get back at Saffron. And presumably they're going to poison / change the recipes. And what I really liked at the end was they do these weird, fun covers, and someone did a Days of Future Past version, but it's Days of Future Repast, and a Baking Bad, you know, they're baking with all the gear like Breaking Bad and fun stuff like that. But I just really was like, what a fun way to sort of tell this type of story, but in a more harmless setting. And I like whimsy too, but with the devices you'd see in like a regular crime book. It seems to be a fun way to go about doing it. You know what I mean? Like what a pairing makes for me. Does that make sense?
That sounds fun. Yeah.
Like, my books
are, might have to get this,
super heavy on this particular one. But we got Jackie Crofts is one of the creatives on the book. And then I'm trying to get the... This book did not have the credits right at the front like I like. Because, you know, that's how I'm programmed from years of reading comics. And this is a digital jobber. I don't know how those things work. I don't know how you kids deal with these digital comic business. It's too confusing for us old people. Where are the pages to turn? I'm dropping my toy swords. Where did that thing go? So, yeah, that's Nutmeg. Action Lab Comics.
Kevin!
Have you ever wanted to kill your teacher?
Nope.
No? Really?
My teacher.
I certainly wouldn't admit it on here.
I thought this was indie comic book noise. Come on.
Maybe slip my teacher acid, but...
Someone better do a background check on Phil quick.
You'll never find anything on me.
No, I had to bring some more Japanese craziness that people didn't care about.
Someone cares, Kevin.
I know someone cares. I know Leaf Insect Man cares. He always cares, sometimes too much. But yeah, something I was reading was this Assassination Classroom, and they have volume one out.
You told me about this one before. It was one I was very interested in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
From Viz Media, they're Shonen Jump Advanced line, so it's not like for the kiddies, but it's not like adult rated either. And they also have an anime coming out right now too.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah. So it follows pretty closely too, if you were to read or if you were to watch. Like, some of these adaptions are almost too close, where you're like, you would want a little more separation so that you could, like, read and watch both. Well,
if I can't get my hands on the comic, now I have a backup plan.
Yeah, that would probably be good. But, you know, watching always, I don't know, it's always a different thing, because there's always voices and weird stuff, so it's
always... I'm a human being, I'm used to voices, I can handle it.
I don't believe you, Kevin. The cartoon isn't exactly the same as reading a comic book.
It what? Almost
I found
is.
My sword, by the way.
I'm glad you found your sword.
Thanks for the update.
So yeah, this I just love how some of these, like, there's no decompression. Like, yeah, like the whole setup is like basically in one chapter. Like, you could do a whole serious thing, and you could spend months like how the world would react to something. But I don't know if it's because of the format it came out in, like if it's in a weekly magazine as opposed to like monthly issues or whatever, if that would change things, if they just want to set it up and then go with the story before, you know, maybe people don't like it and they don't get a chance to get any more out. But there's like that whole thing of this, of just having the setup in the first chapter, and they're just like just barreling ahead, and they're like, oh yeah, this alien just happens to blow up most of the moon, and then he says he wants to be a teacher of a classroom, and the Japanese just go, yeah, sure, that seems fine, that's okay.
What? I thought it was like battle royale in the school.
Well, the whole thing is the kids all have guns and weapons and whatever that are like created specifically to kill this alien.
You made this sound way cooler before.
Did I?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what I said.
you but said anyways. It was like kids killing themselves. Like they were stuck in the school and they were like battling each other.
No, that's Drifting Classroom.
Oh, well, I don't care about this one.
That was kids killing kids. And that was parents killing, well, not parents. That was teachers killing kids, running over kids with cars. This is average everyday kids that flunk out of the regular school, so they have to go to a hidden school up on the hill so no one knows this alien is teaching these kids. And like the military and everything is like, hey, we gotta get these kids some guns, and they have to kill their teacher, teacher within the year, or the whole planet's gonna be blown up. So it's kind of a weird concept, kind of. And you think this would be bad, like you think this would be serious, like, oh man, these kids are trying to kill their teacher all the time. But it's actually, I don't know, it's kind of fun.
Well, he's an alien, so it's not really that bad.
Yeah, well, that's what he says.
Aliens don't have rights, sir.
That he's an alien, but then you kind of wonder, like he makes some offhand remark at one point, and you kind of wonder if he actually is an alien, or if he's, like there's been some weird experiment going on Earth somewhere, and that maybe, like people are in, like somehow hatched this type of threat. But anyways, it sounded like
you said he made a moth-handed remark. And I was like, whoa, does he have moth hands?
He has really weird hands. He doesn't really have hands. Like, he travels, like, super fast and does all this stuff. So he could technically, he does sort of come out of, like, a cocoon type of thing at one point. Because one of them actually gets sort of through to him. And then he sort of comes out of his shell type of thing and, like, regrows himself. So it's kind of weird. But they're not very successful.
He sounds human to me, Kevin.
But he only has, like, the smiley face. He's like a yellow, blobby, tentacle-y, of course tentacles, right, type of guy. And they're, like, trying to kill him through the whole book. And I'm like, yeah, it's really cool that at the beginning they set this up. But at some point it's just, like, a failed attempt, another failed attempt. And like, they don't fill in a lot of background on the characters. So by the end of the volume, I'm kind of like, I hope they do something else. And it seems like with the cliffhanger, they're going to do something else. But I got kind of, not bored, but it started becoming like a formula after the incredible setup. It's like, yeah, they're not going to be able to do this. Like, you need to introduce, like, some other element. And it seems like that's going to happen. But, yeah, this alien honestly wants to teach them. Like, yeah, he wants to be the teacher, but he wants to help the students since they're not in the regular class. And they're, like, I don't know, failing math or whatever. Like, they're not very good students. So he wants to build their confidence and stuff like that at the same time that they're trying to kill him. And they have certain rules about, oh, when I'm teaching you, you know, you can't try to kill me, but when every other time is okay, when I go for lunch and I get some food in, like, China or whatever, you know, I'm open game. You can try and kill me then. And his face also changes colors, so they can try to, like, figure something out. Like, if his face is going green or something, that means something. like whatever emotion he's having, or maybe his guard is down or something. So they're trying to figure all this stuff out so they can kill him and save the Earth. But it's kind of, you think of that, and it's like, that's kind of traumatic at the same time, too. That's messed up. Oh, wow. Very interesting idea, though.
That's cool. Another book that we talked about way back when, actually back in July on episode 344 when it first came out, is a book from Image, is Trees, from Warren Ellis and Jason Howard. And I think we talked about the first issue or two, and I read issues 3 through 8 over the past few days, kind of as a kind of reading as a chunk, which I really enjoyed reading as a chunk because it allowed the characters to stick a little bit more as far as what storylines are going on. And this book is for 17 and older, and you know, just as we thought, Phil. Yeah, it's become a character piece of people kind of living around the trees. And mm-hmm. The trees are the giant tubes. When people say shit's going down the tubes, these are the tubes. big tubes. And they're like, they seem like they're big legs or some sort of connection to the sky from, you know, that's alien. And when they first came down, they released all kinds of like sewage, acid fuel stuff. And since then, they've been dormant, and they've been dormant for like decades now. And cities have sprung up around them, and life and culture has kind of gone on. And this has become a character piece on a few people who are kind of living around the trees. And I think you know, things are going to happen, and we'll see how they react. Fortunately, it hasn't gone to too many different characters. There's just like, I don't know, maybe like 3 or 4 sets of characters or storylines to follow along. So it's, you know, it's not too much to handle in that respect. Have any of you guys kept up reading it?
No. I haven't, but I was wondering, did the small boy from the first issue make it over into other storylines? Or was he just that issue?
No, he did. Okay. He ends up being, he was the kid who wanted to, like, study the trees and kind of be near them, was kind of being called to them, like Richard Dreyfuss was called to the Devil's Tower in the old Close Encounters thing, making it out of his mashed potatoes and stuff. He just felt like he needed to be there. But he gets there, and near to where one of the trees is, and he just becomes like kind of just locks himself up because he's pretty socially unable to access the community. And finally he gets lured out by his guide, this girl. You guys can't see me doing air quotes right now, can you?
Well, I know the exact character you're talking about
because
it's in the first issue.
Yeah. But this girl, air quotes, and he gets his eyes opened socially, sexually, and everything else. And then some big thing happens in the last issue, in 8, that was really major. It seems like a lot of things are happening all of a sudden, so I think we're getting into the next phase of things. There's another story of this girl that I really enjoy, that she's got a gang leader boyfriend, and then she meets this like eccentric author type and kind of becomes his protege, and he's like schools her in all kinds of like how to take down governments and make, you know, run things and street smarts and all kinds of, almost turns into her like into like a ninja type. It's really quite interesting. And then there's this other Antarctic like research station by a tree, and they got this weird plant problem that's almost on a John Carpenter Thing level. And
what's the secrets of the bear box?
the plants becomes a catalyst for the trees doing something big at the end of issue 8, when they are not dormant anymore. It's good. You really should check it out. You know how I am. I am a hard sell on getting into a whole bunch of new characters if they don't immediately appeal to me in some way or draw me in some way. And this, I just rode with it. I'm like, I'm just going to read this at my regular speed. I'm not going to stop down and really try to understand these people as I'm getting into it. And by the second issue, I was engaged with each of their storylines and then slowing down just because I wanted to know.
So I was the opposite, because I liked the first issue a lot, the little boy story, and then the second issue is the one that kind of got me out of it.
Well, I'm talking issues 3 through 8, Phil, so
I know. There's still hope for you. I'm going to probably pick up the trade. Surprisingly, the trade hasn't come out yet.
Well, the series isn't finished, so.
Usually Image is pretty fast, though, with the first one.
I wonder how satisfied you'd be unless you get all the way up to this issue 8, though.
Because
not only does something happen with the trees, but it seems like each one of these storylines that they've invested time in developing the characters around, something very final happens with each of them, where you can see they're each either bring drawn to a close, or were they each setting up something where then something that comes out of each of those storylines is going to be important to the next phase. I don't know. They could completely go to other people, other place, and they could do anything. It's still quite interesting. And again, I got sucked in by the character, so I enjoyed the course.
Yeah, I'll give it a go then, maybe when 2 trades come out.
What else you been going on?
Well, I read the oversized hardcover of The Cape.
Oh, yeah? How was that?
Well, I always thought it was a Joe Hill comic, but it's actually just based on a Joe Hill book, which I did not realize. So I was a little disappointed about that, but I still really enjoyed it. It's so this collects 2 4-issue miniseries and a one-shot. And so the first one's The Cape 1969, which is basically the origin of why this cape that makes this little kid fly exists, which is basically about his dad in the war and just him becoming a prisoner of war. And there's kind of like a shaman guy there and transfers his powers to him, like a part of his uniform. Kind of silly, but still a fun story. And then after the dad dies in the war, like part of his uniform gets mailed to his kids, and the mother sews it on like a patch onto the cape, and that's why it could fly. And but the main story, the second miniseries, is about the brother with the cape basically going batshit crazy and just fucking shit up and killing his family and stuff. The first issue, he takes his ex-girlfriend, who he thinks is cheating with his brother, which she's not, carries her up to the sky and just drops her on a fountain, and her body is just mangled. Some detectives question him, and he just grabs a rope, lassos it around a bear in a zoo, and just flies with it over to their car and drops it on them. Like, he's just horrible, horrible. And yeah, it's a very satisfying comic, and even though it's a different writer, I thought he did a good job. I never read the book, but I thought he did a good job, and I enjoyed it. It would make a cool little movie, but I don't know if I needed a big hardcover. I probably could have just got a cheaper version. Although it was only $40 now that I look at it, so that's not too bad. Because that's 9 comics.
Andrew, anything else from the West Coast?
I'll just quickly mention, the Kickstarter was Wild Blue Yonder, Mike Raked and Zach Howard. It's being released by IDW. Really enjoyed it. It's set in a world where they're kind of living up in the air. So it's kind of got that dogfighter aesthetic to it, you know, where they wear the goggles and they're kind of having little plane-to-plane type fights. Just got the last one. There was a big delay between 5 and 6. It's really pretty involved. I would probably suggest, instead of running down issues, I mean, if you're a digital guy, just grab them that way. Or I'm probably going to just wait till it's all collected and get it in print again. I liked it that much. And just with those big delays, it really throws me off. Because then you got to go back and read the old ones. Because I'm like, wait, I vaguely remember who the characters are. But, you know, like, you forget where things are and everything. It's always I mean, it's bad enough month to month, but if you put more than 3 months between issues, I'm really going to be lost. But I really liked it.
Cool. Kevin, got a quick one for to finish up with?
Quick one. I enjoyed I Have Our Time Walker by Fred VanLanty and Clayton Henry. A lot of good time-traveling, time-hopping, crazy guys coming after you as you're, you know, you might not suppose... Maybe they don't want you time-traveling, or you're not supposed to be time-traveling, and you're like, you know, doing some swashbuckling, and then you're traveling to the future, and Rye makes a cameo appearance, and you know all the good stuff when you're sort of the Doctor Who-ing it up and James Bonding it up, and whatever genre you're going through, you have all that craziness going on. It's a fun time. Great cover too.
Henry, do the cover as well?
Not sure. I'm not sure. I'm looking at it right now.
It's still great.
That's the whole circles thing. Like each circle around the character is like a different world type of thing. Oh, so cool. It looks like he's passing from one into another, and the silhouette sort of moving and into another circle. It's pretty cool.
I got one more quick one, too. It's sort of a volume two, although not really. It's Dynamite's John Carter, Warlord of Mars. It's their second series. The first one was just Warlord of Mars, and now it's John Carter, Warlord of Mars. Three issues of it are out so far, and Ron Mars, a friend of mine, admitted John Carter fan, admitted Edgar Rice Burroughs fan. He's writing it, and he's really crafted a really John Carter-y story. There's a guy from Carter's Earth, back from, you know, their, Civil War time, and he's come to Mars and taken over Barsoom, and he's got Daisha Thoris captured, and they've got their back-and-forth repartee stuff is going on that's great, and she's trying to escape and whatnot. And meanwhile, John Carter is, somewhere else on the planet, but realizing that something happened back in Barsoom, and he's trying to rally his resources without really having many to choose from to find out what happened back home, and so we can get there, and then there's, I'm sure, going to be a big confrontation. This is going to be good. It's already good. And the art is by a couple of guys I haven't heard of at all, Ab Hishnek Malsuni, and the inker is Salt Garisa. Really, really good stuff. This might be the best regular month-to-month type art that I've seen on a Dynamite book at all, and certainly the best John Carter art that I've seen, other than, you know, like the splashy covers and stuff, which this also has plenty of. But it's Ron Mars giving us a good John Carter story, and it's really been enjoyable so far. So I would seriously recommend checking it out if you like John Carter stuff, and especially if you like John Carter and you've been disappointed by the comics in the past.
All right.
All right, gang, that's another indie comic book noise. We'll gather here again and figure out what we've been reading and share with each other and with you all by proxy, because that's what this is all about here. Right, guys?
Indeed.
What?
Alberta, let your hair hang low. Alberta, let your hair hang low. I'll give you more gold than your apron can hold. If you're lonely, let your hair hang low. What's on your mind? Alberta, what's on your mind? You keep me worried, bothered all of the time. Alberta, what's on your mind? Alberta, don't you treat me unkind. Alberta, don't you treat me unkind. Oh, my heart is sad, 'cause I want you so bad. Alberta, don't you treat me unkind. Alberta, let your hair